Okay. Okay, so for the purposes of the tape, we've just been doing an exercise in which we have been laying out three tarot cards for each other and reading the cards. Look, one card being for Malkut, one card for the 31st bath, one card for Hod. Now, the purpose of doing such a reading is to bring us into relationship with the dynamic of the 31st path. So it's not an abstract reading, it's not a reading that tells us about anything cognitive particularly about what the Tree of Life is, but it is an invocation through an act of intention of the presence of that path. And the presence of that path, really, this particular path, is a fusion really of the energies of Malkut and Hod. Now, Hod here is the creative aspect of mind, the artificer, the shaper, the creator of living ideas. Malkut is the manifester, the embodier, the incorporator, the place where these ideas become tangible, concrete, and have action. The field in between them is the place of the meeting, the overlapping meeting of these two fields. So the 31st path, which has this card, the judgment card connected to it, which the judgment card really, last judgment, is the waking up of things. So it's the coming together of things that are either that are latent and have gone to sleep or even seemingly dead. It's a waking up of that and the manifestation of something new. In the tarot card, in the Rider Waite pack, what we're given is the images of graves opening up, an angel with a trumpet making a blast, waking up, and what wakes up is a triad, a man, a woman, and a child, which represents opposites. And very often can represent old opposites, can represent opposites, and then the child is the conjunctive point, the emergence of the new that comes out of the experience of the overlapping fields. Now, one of the issues always in working with the paths is that they are confusing, and they're confusing because they're always, it's always a dynamic, a fusion of two different qualities working together.
So the cards that we picked for Hod and Malkut,
yeah,
are those spheres in relation to the 31st card?
Yes, they are. They're focused. No, they're not the general purpose.
Are those spheres in relation to that path?
It's specifically in relation to this path, because what we're looking at today is the aspects of those spheres that are presenting themselves in relationship to this act of fusion with the path.
But it makes more sense to me from Hod to Malkut, given what you said, that it's something later that is manifested.
Well, it can be done either way around. There can be latency in Malkut as well as there can be latency in the mind. There can be latent images in the mind wanting to emerge, but there can be latency in the body, energies or memories stored in the body, which also come into connection with the creative aspect of mind. So the latency can be from either angle. You can do it both ways, either way.
So you're saying that either side of the central
Well, the path can move in either direction, yes, right? Yes. The experience of the path is being in the middle between these conjoined fields, and the field could just depending on what's going on, you can out of that place of fusion, you could have a new idea.
Yes.
Right, so that would move you in a sense into the place of Hod, the creative mind. Or an idea could move into activity and embodiment, in which case the path moves in the other direction.
So the cards that we drew for the
path,
yeah,
we're using what we interpret from the card to understand how we are working with the path.
Well, I mean, it's slightly a bit linear, we just call it. You're looking really at what's happened. So these are all hints. These cards, as you lay them out, they're hints or suggestions as to what's happening in that dynamic. So the, if you like, the card for Malkut, the card for Hod, gives you a hint about the aspects of Hod and Malkut that are presenting themselves in that moment. The middle card, which is about the path itself, gives you some sense of how that dynamic is operating just in that moment. Mm. Okay, and so
your relationship to the middle part, to the, it's not the path, it's your relationship to the path, isn't it, at this moment?
Yes, well, the path is not a neutral thing. The path is always a dynamic,
yes,
which you're involved in. So you're using that image as a sort of a mirror to give you a hint into where you are in that dynamic just here and now, really.
I've got the Queen of Swords upside
yep.
down in a middle position.
Mm-hmm. So just take that image, right? So what does that image suggest to you?
Well, it's very top heavy.
Uh-huh.
And she's going to fall on her sword.
Oh, right, okay.
And the crowd's going to come off. And then she's just... She does look a bit stuck, a bit rigid.
Well, she's not rigid, she's upside down, is she? Well, I mean, she could be rigid the other way around, right? But actually, what you've just said is she's going to fall on her sword and her crown's going to fall off. So that's an interesting dynamic. Right, so in terms of what we're working with, Andy, there's something about something there that represents falling on your sword and a crown coming off. It suggests the opposite of being stuck. It suggests the abandonment of some position. Oh, that's really what that image suggests, right? Because with the tarot cards, when we play with them like this, really be kind of quite simple with them. And just so if you've got an upside down card like that, an upside down queen, well, she's not going to stay on her throne. She's going to fall down. She's likely going to fall on her sword. She's likely going to lose her crown. So that gives a very dynamic image for something that's happening in this process. Yeah. Complete opposite of being stuck, actually turned upside down and something really changing is what would be suggested to me by that. The main thing with tarot packs is not to get fixed on anything you read in books about the images. Right, they're desperate. Because once you, if you learn the images, learn the meanings from books, you stop looking at the cards. Actually, the brilliant thing about the tarot pack is it's a set of powerful, interesting kind of images, which if you just play with and let them play back with you and let them talk back to you, they show you all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah, once you've got a thing in your head, you think, oh, that means that.
Yeah, that it gets in the way, right? That's the trouble.
That's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, so when you have that, you're just going to have to let that be there, but then try and keep looking through that into the image. So don't turn it into don't stick with the cognitive thing. Get interested in the image, really interested in the image, the kind of character of the guy running off with the swords and
I feel like he's stealing something, because that's the thing, isn't it? But maybe he's not stealing.
He may not be stealing something, because that's what they say in the book, so forget that. He may not be stealing, right? He may be going off with swords he's made himself. There's all kinds of possibilities there if you just kind of listen to the image, yeah?
Actually, yeah, and what Holly said helped me.
The thing to remember with the tarot pack, let's talk a little bit about the tarot pack before we hit the tea break, is it's It's a mysterious, very mysterious thing, the tarot. As we said, as I've said before to you, I think it appears in the Renaissance. It appears as a very high status item before it later is kind of turned into a card game. These are the earliest ever tarot were possessed by noble families, or beautiful paintings. And those of you who had the first weekend, I brought an example of that, where there's, they're gilded, they're silvered, and they come out of that ferment of the Renaissance, where the whole, in a sense, Western Europe, having been dominated really by very powerful Catholicism, it started breaking out in particular what the Renaissance think is called humanism. So the Renaissance, the people like Massilio Fenicio, the Pico della Mirandola, the great thinkers of the Renaissance, saw themselves as humanists and saw themselves as reclaiming a creativity and a capacity to imagine. That had been previously restricted by theological dogma. And now, out of that mix somewhere, the tarot pack appears. The curious thing for those of us who study the Kabbalah is that it works extraordinarily well with the Tree of Life. It really does. Now, we don't know why that does, because actually there's all kinds of huge debates about the tarot, and kind of an academics are scathing about those versus the tree and the tarot and say they've got no connection at all. But really, weirdly, they fit phenomenally well. And so I can personally only... I can't prove, because there's no way to prove it, but it does not seem to me insignificant that both the Christian Kabbalah and the Tarot appear at that time in that little corner of Renaissance Italy. It works too well for there not to be some correspondence with that. And in a way, one of the great things about the tarot in relation to trees, you basically walk around with a sort of a tool where you can work with the Tree of Life in all kinds of interesting kind of ways. Now, we've done a little bit today by looking at one path, but you can, for example, you could lay out 10 cards in the shape of the 10 sephiroth of the tree, to have a look and to contemplate, what's my relationship with the tree and my tree, or I could think, okay, I'm going to lay out the Tree of Glastonbury today, and see what that shows me about Glastonbury. So this is a sort of imagistic tool of inquiry that you can use to look at anything. And the key thing above all is to come into relationship with so have one pack that, don't flip from different styles. Have one pack that you like, that talks to you, and then get more and more familiar with those images. And try not to get too wound up on any images, any descriptions of what the cards mean that you find in books. Because actually you will go beyond, even when they're accurate, you will need to go beyond that in order to allow the conversation between you and the tarot pack to deepen. But if you think, if we think of the minor cards, 1 to 10, these are the 10 sephirot. The 22 trumps are the 22 paths. The 22 trumps are the 22 paths of the Tree of Life, right, the connections. The cards 1 to 10 are the 10 sephirot, right? The minor cards are divided into four suits. The suit of wands gives us the world of Atzulut, of a sphere. The cups gives us the world of Beria. Swords gives us the world of Yetzira. Coins or pentacles gives us the world of Asiya. So we have the four aspects of each sephira depicted in cards of different suits. The court cards are connected to, which we haven't really talked much about, but I'll come to are connected to the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh and the subdivisions of that name. And they also represent, but they can also represent types of a human being interacting with the tree. So, I mean, this is a very brief kind of thing. We'll go into it more and more at a time. But the tarot is just this wonderful kind of tool of inquiry that is best worked with really lightly and playfully. You know, don't get heavy with it. Just get interested, play with it, talk to it, become familiar with the imagery of it, and so that it talks back more fluently to you.
Time to say anything more about the court cards,
is there?
Well, two
aspects of the court cards. On the one hand, it represents types of a human being. Right, so you have, but it's organized around something called around the word Yud He Vav He, which is the name of God in the Kabbalah. So the 16 court cards give us a sort of a breakdown, really, of their 4x4. So, for example, the king of wands is fire of fire, is yod of yod, who represents therefore a concentration or a distillation of will and intention. Similarly, we would say the Queen of Cups represents a distillation, is hay of hay, or water of water, represents a distillation of receptivity. If we look at the Queen of Wands, she is hay of yod, or water of fire. Here we have the quality of will that also has some receptivity in it. If we look at the Knight of Wands, here we have the airiness of fire, or the Vav of yod, which represents a kind of that quality, that sort of rationalizing quality of air, transmitting quality of air, where there's a kind of energy of clarity that's expressing itself in the action of will. If we look at the Princess of Fire, of Wands, here we have the Earth of Fire, or the Hay Final of Yod, which represents a capacity of will that makes things concrete. Right. So each of those. So we can go through each of those. Each of those 16 cards, as I say, as well as representing types of purple, represents a type of energy, a type of creative energy. The name Yud He Vav He in the Kabbalah is, in a way, it sums the whole tree. It's the whole creative process. The point of the letter Yod before the Yod is manifest represents Keter. The letter Yod is Chokmah. The letter He is Bina. The letter Vav represents all the Sefirot up to Yesod. The He final represents Malchut. So Yud He Vav He, the name that cannot be spoken, the divine name, is a sort of a summary of the whole tree. So you can play with and use the court cards as an expansion of that particular creative process.
So they don't go on a specific place in the tree?
No.
There's all sorts of things about that.
That's right, yeah. I mean, so basically they are, if you like, they interact with the tree. They could turn up anywhere. And they're different. And in a sense, you can they're a whole little contemplation sequence of their own in some ways. In a reading, often when they come up, they either represent a kind of a particular kind of energy that's present, or a person who embodies that energy.
Just because we've got Shin on this.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the relation of Shin with the tetragram, I know there's sort of placing of and I know there's all sorts of different views of that. And I was reading in the book last night about Tom Olerman using that.
Yeah, the word you—I mean, the word I most often work with is yod he shin vav he, because actually the way, I'll just explain how I do that in a sense, really, how Tom taught me to do that, was the so the letter shin that represents that we're looking at shin this weekend in its kind of action in that one path, but it represents the unmanifest spirit. Right, because it represents the thing that you find in the Kabbalah that are called the three veils of the unmanifest, where the limitless light, the limitless and no thing. So if we were looking at that particular kind of sequence of Yud He, Vav He, and then the 16 subdivisions, you'd have the Shin right at the center, because that represents the unmanifest ground out of which things emerge. Because that's the kind of quality, and that you get that same quality really in this path, because it is this mysterious mysterious quality of resurrection. So the word Yud He Shin Vav He, which is a word many of you have heard me use quite a lot, in a way for me represents the combination of the manifest tree and the unmanifest ground of the tree. And it's we always used to call it the healing name, the name that heals, because it brings everything together. The great beauty of the Tree of Life, the great beauty of the Kabbalah, is you can expand it into quite complex things to help you understand things in a lot of detail, and then you can simplify it down. So in the end, we can simplify the whole of the Tree of Life down to Yud He Shin Vav He, and then by just contemplating that, you meet all of those energies. When you want to get more detailed about it, you can look at the tree. When we want to get more detail, do more detail still, we can look at the paths in the tree. We can look at the four levels that exist of expression that exist within any sephira. We can look at the 16 expressions of the creative life energy, and look at the interactions between them. We can create all kinds of shapes out of this, really. Dependent on need. Now, the Kabbalah gets immensely oppressive if you get caught up in the complexity of it and feel you've got to know all the complexity of it. It's best like that great book that Hermann Hesse wrote called The Glass Bead Game, where you're making relationships between things. And the Kabbalah is a device, Tree of Life is a device for creating relationship, bringing things together, allowing curiosity and seeing things in a different way by playfully juxtaposing different things together. Now, what we've done this weekend, different from the last weekend, we've juxtaposed a particular kind of elements together. Hod, Netzach, 31st Path. And so everything that we've done this weekend, everything you've touched, it will somewhere have a relationship to that, because that's the intention that we're holding together. Let's have a break for a cup of tea and loo or whatever, and then we'll see where we are.